Of those 24 original students, many entered denominational work and have a share in its development. Mrs. White, while she was at the St. Kilda Road Bible School, lived with us. It was my privilege to sit at the table with her and her son Willie and her stenographer. I knew at the time that it was an honour, but I appreciate it even more now. She often spoke to us in our worship hour, and her messages were always stirring and inspirational. It was wonderful to hear those solemn truths presented by the Lord's messenger. One day the principal, Professor Russo, came to me with a letter in his hand. Mrs. White has had a vision, and she has important matters written in this letter which she wishes posted. Will you see that it goes out in the next mail without fail? It is a serious letter. There is trouble between two ministers. Mrs. White has had a vision about it. Of course, I was happy that he had selected me to post that important letter. Later, I was told more about it. A minister in America was envious of another minister who had been advanced more rapidly than he. Then he started rumours about his fellow minister and took into his confidence a woman in the church. Finally, the matter became so serious that the conference committee decided to deal with the matter. 12 days before the committee was to meet, Mrs. White in Australia had a vision at the school on St. Kilda Road and immediately wrote out what had been shown her to be sent to America. That was the letter I posted. In her vision, Mrs. White saw the face of the minister who was stirring up the trouble. She saw the face of the minister of whom he was jealous. She heard the private conversations and was instructed by the angel in the vision to send counsel to the committee that they might know how to deal with the situation. Mrs. White had received no information from America as to where the committee was to meet, but God knew, and God saw to it that the letter was addressed to the very house where these men gathered for their conference. The letter arrived after the committee had gone into session. They were grappling with the problem and trying to find a solution when the communication addressed to the chairman arrived and was handed to him. He glanced at it, then said, "Excuse me, this is a letter from Ellen G. White in Australia. I will open it now." The committee sat silent for a few seconds as the chairman began to read. "Oh, this letter is about this very trouble we are discussing. I do not know what is in it, but I will read it aloud." When the chairman had finished the reading of the letter, he said to the committee, "Now we will call this minister and test the case." The jealous minister was sent for. "Did you, on such a day, meet Mrs. So-and-so at such a place and say the following words to her about Pastor So-and-so?" As the words of Mrs. White's message were read to him, the minister coloured and trembled. "You received that from Ellen G. White over in Australia?" he exclaimed. "You admit you said those words?" "Yes." The woman was sent for. "Were you with this minister on such a date, at such a place? And did you say these words on that occasion?" At the reading of the message, as it began, the woman started trembling violently. "All we want to know is, did you say that?" She admitted all the message said. No longer was the committee in distress as to whether that innocent minister should be dismissed. I've always been glad that I had that small part in sending on its mission a message which was to go halfway round the world to vindicate an honest man. It is wonderful how the spirit of prophecy works. On another occasion, while Mrs. White was with us at the Australian Bible School, she had a vision concerning a matter which was troubling our brethren in Europe. False doctrines were arising and were unsettling some of the new believers. The problem was of such magnitude that denominational leaders from America had gone to Europe to help with the situation. Mrs. White, at the St. Kilda Road School, had a vision about this matter. and posted instructions which had been given to her by the Lord to the brethren in Europe. Here, too, the letter arrived while they were in committee session. She gave specific instruction concerning what they were to do as spoken to her by the angel. Later, she received a letter from Europe telling how her message had arrived just at the time needed and that the situation had been dealt with as she had instructed and that the problem was clearing. She told us this experience, and it solemnized our hearts to know how God was using his messenger right while she was living among us. While the Bible school was being held, and Mrs. White was with us, the first Australian camp meeting was held at Brighton Beach, December the 29th, 1893, to January 15, 1894. We all, teachers and students, and Mrs. White and her staff of workers, attended and were camped on the ground. I was chosen with a few other young men students to police the grounds. Mrs. White conducted the main preaching services during the first 2 days, and her topics were the commandments of God, especially the Sabbath, and the second coming of Christ. How she did describe those closing scenes of earth's history! This stirred Satan, the enemy of Christ. He too has his followers. Soon the larrikins, or the rowdies, mustered in opposition. They first threw stones and pulled down a tent. My fellow police students reported to me that the hoodlums had threatened that the next night they would vent their hatred upon Mrs. White and her tent. I reported this to the school faculty, and they decided to procure police assistance from Melbourne headquarters. Police headquarters sent along a sturdy Irish policeman, a Roman Catholic. Upon his arrival the next night, I stationed him by Mrs. White's tent, letting him know who she was and the intentions of the larrikins. I stationed my student police outside of the grounds, close to the dwelling tents. I told them to let the larrikins know that we had a city policeman guarding Mrs. White's tent. Well, as the night began, on came the enemy. They were told that we had a city policeman guarding Mrs. White's tent. The news quieted them, and later they retired, but the constable kept his close watch. Mrs. White was told of the procedure, but she didn't become alarmed. She said that her guardian angel would protect her and all the campground, and she went to bed and slept in perfect peace. Soon after midnight, the policeman noticed a light forming over Mrs. White's tent, and in that light a silver-coloured angel appeared. The supernatural scene made a profound impression upon the policeman, a devout Catholic, as indeed it would have upon anyone. Having seen that guardian angel keeping watch over Mrs. White's tent, he was certain that she was safe, so later he retired and reported at the city police watch house. An explanation was immediately demanded as to why he had left his watch. Simply, this guardian of the public told of the vision that had been vouchsafed him, told his superiors that this woman was guarded better than he could guard her. Strangely enough, his explanation was accepted. But that constable attended the rest of the main preaching services of a camp meeting. He accepted the Advent message. He became one of our most ardent church members. In time, he settled out in the country where he lived his religion. Truly does the Bible tell us of man's heavenly angel guard. How precious the promise of God's care for his people on this earth. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling, for he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. When God's people simply comply with the conditions, he sends the angel guard when it is needed. From other experiences in the life of Ellen G. White, it is certain that When danger threatened her, she relied fully upon the divine protection and did not require or desire police protection. The fact that she was willing that this policeman should be on duty at her tent is exceedingly interesting. Had he not been on duty there, he would not have witnessed with his own eyes that heavenly visitation, would not have heard Mrs. White's subsequent preaching, which convinced him of the truth of the Advent message. How little any of us realize the thin thread of circumstance by which God directs the course of our lives. In 1894, Fairley Masters told me, I was chosen to go to India as a colporteur. When this call came to me, it meant quite a change in my plans, for I had intended continuing my schooling and training for the ministry. But the call to a mission field was definite, and the Lord fortified me with courage. Leaving our Bible school at St. Kilda was a trying experience. It was hard to part with fellow students and go so far away. Accompanied by my parents, I left for India. They were eager to see that country again and to have a part in the spreading of the Advent message. The Bible Echo of September 17, 1894 carries an interesting item headed Australia's First Seventh-day Adventist Missionary. On the 8th instant, Mr. and Mrs. Masters and their son, Fairley Masters, sailed for India, where they intend to engage in missionary work. Fairley Masters has been a student at the Bible school during the 3 years of its existence. Their departure for India is an event of great interest to us. Although many workers have been trained for the home field, these are the first that have gone from Australia to a foreign field. Our best wishes and earnest prayers accompany them. Our going, continued Mr. Masters, came about in this way. 3 colporteurs were needed for India. So it was decided at the General Conference that America should provide 1, England 1, and Australia 1. William A. Lenker and A. T. Strope were sent by that arrangement, and I was asked to go from Australia. My parents decided to go also, and they paid their expenses as well as mine. In those days, workers had to be self-supporting. Bidding farewell to my fellow students was not easy. My age? I was 22 when I left for India. A long voyage? Yes, we were 6 weeks on that steamer of the P&O line. We changed boats at Colombo. And so, to India, at the call of God, went this man who might have spent his lifetime shoeing horses in a blacksmith shop. That would have been honest labour, but God had a broader field of service for him. After a pleasant trip, we landed at Madras, where we had hoped to meet A. T. Stroop, who had come from England to work in South India, but he'd been obliged to return to England when overtaken by severe illness. Neither did we meet the other colporteur, William Lenker, who had been sent from America, for he was in Bombay and was to work that area and central India. My parents remained only a brief time in Madras, just long enough to see me progressing successfully. Then they went across to Calcutta. Experiences? Well, at the very beginning of my mission experience in that great land of heathenism, I saw what I faced. I began my colporteur work by asking the Lord to direct me to the text of Scripture that would be a source of guidance and encouragement to me. Very deeply I felt my need of His help. My Bible opened to Psalms 27, verses 13 and 14. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and He shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. What courage those precious words brought to me, as I read them in a strange land yearning to serve God.